Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Now we continue our series, 51 Council Members in 52 Weeks, in which we're touching every neighborhood of New York City this year by welcoming all 51 members of City Council in a year when most of Council is new because of term limits and it's majority female for the first time ever. We move on to District 22 this week and freshman member Tiffany Caban, representing voters in Astoria, East Elmhurst, Jackson Heights, and Woodside. Rikers Island is in the District 2, which is otherwise in Queens. As some of you know, Tiffany Caban was a candidate for Queens DA as a progressive prosecutor candidate, losing to Melinda Katz, but then going on to win this city council seat last year. Her bio page says, a Queens native, Tiffany was born in Richmond Hill to Puerto Rican parents who grew up in Woodside houses. Before joining the New York City Council, Tiffany worked as a public defender, representing people who did not have resources to defend themselves against the brutal system of mass incarceration. In her years at New York County Defender Services and the Legal Aid Society's criminal defense practice, Tiffany represented over 1,000 indigent clients in cases ranging from turnstile jumping to homicide. Councilmember Caban, welcome to WNYC, and thanks for joining 51 Council Members in 52 Weeks.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Let me start with a question that I ask every council member in this series, and that is very simply, what's the most common reason that constituents contact your office this year since you got, inaugurated in January?
Oh, it's overwhelmingly transportation and housing, right? Street safety. We have unfortunately had a number of vehicular deaths in the district, from delivery workers to, just community members that were out trying to get from point A to point B. And it's been really horrific. And so that is a lot of what we get. And then housing, folks dealing with landlord issues and other things. We actually did a tenants' right training with an entire co-op complex because of a lot of issues there, teamed up with Woodside on the Move and the Legal Aid Society to get some work done there. But those are definitely the two biggest.
How do you find that you can help them, and how do you find that you're frustrated in your inability through the system that exists to help them?
Oh, I mean, the frustrations are very real, but I think, part of it is just understanding that there is an ecosystem of support, right? And when folks come to us, it is our job in our council office to kind of clearly articulate to people, these are the tools that we have in our toolbox. These are the things that we can do. And communicating that frustration, I think, is really important and valuable to constituents, that they understand that you care, that they understand where some of the roadblocks are, and then just trying to make those connections, passing off to whether it's community-based organizations or whether it's one of our partners at a different level of government that's better situated to pull the right lever to get them the help that they need. I'm sure lots of folks talk about the frustration of the bureaucracy and some of the difficulties in the ways that agencies relate to one another, or, the kind of communication that exists. But my team is phenomenal. And so I'm really, really glad that we have folks that have good government experience, but also are organizers at heart and do a lot to sort of think outside of the box to make sure that we are supporting our constituents in any way that we can.
Listeners, we can take some phone calls, especially from the district, for Tiffany Caban. And many of you know the name. Tiffany Caban is not just any freshman member of City Council. Not that every freshman member of City Council isn't special in their own right, but Tiffany Caban was a cause not that long ago to try to get a progressive prosecutor elected in Queens and didn't quite make it, but she's now in City Council. She's got a lot to say about the criminal justice system. She openly labels herself a police abolitionist. We'll get into that, but we're talking about all kinds of things as a member of City Council must deal with. So who from Astoria, East Elmhurst, Jackson Heights, Woodside, anyone on Rikers Island? We get calls from Rikers Island on this show, council member.
Get a lot of calls from Rikers Island. We've done a lot of work to support. Those are my constituents, their families and themselves.
And so, listeners, any calls from the district or a few from without would be okay. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-WNYC. 9692 or tweet your question for Tiffany Caban at Brian Lehrer. Well, let me follow up on what you just said. How do you represent somebody who's incarcerated at Rikers?
Yeah, well, I'll be really honest with you. It has been an incredible challenge. I think one thing that our team and we said this going in when, you know, I took office and our team came together, we had a little bit of like a retreat and talked about what are the things that we want to accomplish? What are some of the things that we want to do? And, you know, for so long, Rikers Island, the folks on Rikers have been disappeared a bit. And we all had the same desire to say, hey, we are going to help these folks. I was very familiar with, you know, what folks were experiencing from my days as, you know, a public defender. And we have had to, it's been interesting because our constituent services director, for example, can take a similar problem, right, and go to a relevant agency to move things forward. But there are limited people that you can talk to when it comes to, you know, our constituents on Rikers Island. And there are a lot of really frustrating roadblocks to getting information and really getting that back to families. But we've been exploring lots of different ways to do that. And then also understanding that constituent services tie directly into legislative priorities, ties directly into budget priorities, and saying, you know, one of the biggest ways that we can help folks on Rikers Island is to push forward to build out a public health infrastructure that keeps people from cycling in to Rikers in the first place. And then just amplifying and uplifting so that people are constantly aware of what's happening. And that's a little bit of inside-outside game, right? Like working with directly impacted folks and advocates to continue to sound the alarm so that people cannot look away.
Are you in favor of the federal takeover of Rikers Island that's being considered? As you know, the Adams administration has filed a plan to try to stave that off. But I wonder what your position is on that as to whether city government under de Blasio, under Adams, you know, maybe going back much further, has proved itself incapable of keeping people safe at Rikers Island.
Yeah, I mean, you hit the last point on the head. The city has absolutely proven itself incapable of that. And while I answer, I'm going to get my dog to...
Wait, that's okay. Now you have to tell us your dog's name.
My dog's name is Natalie. She is an 11-year-old Beagle Pit Bull mix, and she knows just when to be disruptive, where she can get like a treat or a bone.
So you've learned from her to adapt that strategy politically. Hello,
right.
Natalie. Good dog, Natalie. Be quiet, Natalie. Anyway, go ahead.
Yes. So, I mean, to answer your question, it's complicated, right? I don't think that, you know, a federal receivership by any means solves our problems, but something has to give, right? In the Federal Monitor report, they said very clearly, they said these high rates are not typical, they're not expected, and they are not normal, right? And people need to understand that throughout our, you know, correctional facilities across the country, this is a particularly acute crisis right here in our city on Rikers Island. And it's a failure. It is a failure of management. It is a failure of transparency and accountability. And so I think something had to happen. It certainly has gotten the mayor's attention in bringing up that option. And then we also have to hold at the same time that is not the only answer, right? We cannot ramp up the solitary confinement torture program. We have to decarcerate. We have to close Rikers Island. And we have to invest in proven community-based public safety strategies and public health infrastructure. Like, these are things that have to happen at the same time, because Rikers Island is not just, you know, a physical place. It is a culture. It is a way and a strategy of doing things to presumably achieve some level of safety and health, and it has failed abysmally.
Has the Adams administration succeeded at all, in your view? I mean, we had the tragedy upon tragedy of the fifth death already this year at Rikers Island just the other day. But we had, I think, an image of Adams Correction Commissioner Molina as somebody who was more hardcore sort of pro-correction officers union and not the reformer that that Mayor de Blasio's last correction commissioner was. And yet, The mayor argues, look, the absenteeism rate among correction officers, which is one of the biggest problems, has gone down under Molina, so they're making progress. Yeah. Do you have an opinion about that?
I mean, first off, I want to debunk the second point. And this is something I have brought up in two council hearings at this point. I think one in a criminal justice committee hearing. Actually, no, I think they were both criminal justice committee hearings. But this contention that more officers have come back is actually a little bit of a red herring. They're going off of numbers based on, January numbers, and saying like, oh, well, 1,200, 1,300 officers came back in, mid-January, late January. But the reality is that those 1,200, 1,300 officers that they're talking about, those are the folks that took off over the holidays, over the Christmas and New Year's break. And so there actually hasn't been much progress on that front. And, there are things with this administration that I agree with and I hope that we lean into, and that when they get said, that they are not, it's not just rhetoric, and we are seeing them reflected in actual line items in our budget. But one area of clear failure is Rikers Island, without a doubt. Every single person deserves to be safe there, whether you are an incarcerated person, whether you are a civilian employee, whether you are a corrections officer, and how things are functioning right now makes nobody safe. And we cannot double down on these strategies that have created a breeding ground for violence. And so, a first move being to fire the oversight officer, big mistake and a huge red flag. What we're seeing again is just a really gross mismanagement from the top down that is resulting in really unsafe conditions. And we have to pivot to different strategies.
You just mentioned that there are a number of things you agree with Mayor Adams on that you hope he follows through on. What's an example or two of those?
Ooh, overdose prevention centers. They're the most beautiful example of public health infrastructure that can be really transformative and have this really large ripple effect. So for folks who don't know what overdose prevention centers are, they're also known as safe injection facilities, but they're really holistic care centers. They save lives. They have serviced thousands of people at this point. They have reversed hundreds of overdoses, not a single death on site. We have known year over year over year that criminalizing substance use, drug use, is not the answer, right? We have to be outcome driven. And if it saves lives, it's worth doing. And there's really a paradigm shift around sort of the criminalization mentality around drug use and understanding that it's actually a health issue, that what we need to be doing is treating the underlying trauma that leads to substance use disorder and all these different things. But we're talking about also a particularly, vulnerable population that is not getting a lot of other needs met. And so these OPCs, and we have two of the first in the country right here in our city doing great work. And in addition to keeping people alive, they're creating on-ramps to regular physical and mental health care to populations that really struggle, that usually their primary care, if they get any, is walking into an emergency room, right? Getting folks connected with a primary care provider, getting access to therapy and mental health services. They function as safe respites, so places where you can come and shower and sit and rest, to be in community. And that humanizing, dignifying experience and connections to people really make all the difference in the world to individuals' journey to being healthier and whole human beings. And then they're there. Ready on the spot in the second when somebody says, hey, I'm ready to stop using, or I'm ready to do X, Y, or Z. So, On Point is the organization that's really running it. Shout out to Sam Rivera, who's been doing incredible work out there, and all the entire team. But the mayor recently came out and said, hey, I support having these open 24 hours a day because they're currently not, and mm-hmm. having them in every borough. Absolutely agree with that.
We're in our series, folks, 51 council members in 52 weeks, in which we're touching every neighborhood of New York City this year by welcoming all 51 members of City Council in a year when most of council is new because of term limits and it's majority female for the first time. We're in District 22 this week with freshman member Tiffany Caban, the district being largely Northwest Queens plus Rikers Island. And let's take a call from the district. R.A. in Astoria. You're on WNYC with Tiffany Caban. Hello, R.A.
Good morning. Hi, Tiffany. How are you?
I'm doing all right. How are you doing?
Good, good, good. I actually live two blocks away from your office. I was curious on your opinion and strategy with the rising of crimes that's been going on in the neighborhood. Like, there's been a shooting over by the CVS on Dittmar's there on Cinco de Mayo, and just like the random things. And, you know, I support you in terms of the abolishing police. I mean, what's the relationship that you have with the local department, the 114? You know, is there something moving? I mean, even myself going to the community affairs meeting, I haven't seen much movement. I just wanted to get from your standpoint, your opinion of what's happening.
Yeah, thank you. That's first of all, that is a really important question and such a valid concern in this moment. You know, we at this, to place it into context, right? We in this time are experiencing, you know, crime and harm at lower levels than we've seen in past decades. But that does not change the fact that like one incident of harm is one too many. One incident of gun violence is one too many. And so we have a lot of work to do. And this goes back to a common theme that I will say over and over again. If it saves lives, it's worth doing. We have to go, you know, and do the hard work to dig deep into root causes of violence, because we have invested time over time, doubling, tripling down on policing strategies that have not gotten us the results that we want, need, and deserve. And really understanding that public, like to advance public safety, you have to divorce it from being synonymous with policing. And New Yorkers actually know that. An impressive thing about the recent survey that was done, the New York City Speak survey, was something over 62,000 New Yorkers responded, the largest in our city's history. And when asked about public safety and how we achieve and what they would like to see, the first things that people said were housing, right? Getting people housing, you know, investing in homeless services. And then the second thing was mental health responders for folks who are in mental health crisis that were not police officers. So there's a real understanding around how we have to take these different approaches. We know that, you know, good, stable housing reduces violence. We know that economic security, which means, you know, access to good paying jobs, fair wages, things like that, reduce violence. And so taking this holistic approach to building out that infrastructure and then investing in expanding the crisis management system, right? Violence interrupters, we know that they can reduce gun violence by upwards to 60, 70% in ways that police officers, the police department has not been successful. So leaning into these different strategies that work is just so, so important. And then to be entirely candid with you, right? You asked about, well, what is my relationship to the 114th precinct? We communicate. When there is an act of violence in the community, we have a conversation about it. You know, for me, on the other side of anything like that, is that I want to make sure that my office and myself is there to support, you know, survivors and victims of harm, saying, hey, here's what our office can connect you with, whether it is services, whether it's organizations that can provide material resources as your family tries to heal and recover. Again, this is really focused on what kind of communities and what kind of city we are trying to build. And I think that the city's job is to create a workforce that meets the needs of everyday people in New York, especially the folks who have been marginalized and exploited the most. And right now, our workforce does not reflect that. And so making sure that we are building out that caring workforce that can execute really good public health and public safety strategies.
This is WNYC FM HD and AM New York, WNJT FM 88.1 Trenton, WNJP 88.5 Sussex, WNJY 89.3 Netcong, and WNJO 90.3 Toms River. We are New York and New Jersey public radio and live streaming at WNYC.org. It's 11 o'clock, a few more minutes with Councilmember Tiffany Caban. To follow up on the answer that you were giving, you ran as a police abolitionist, and you reaffirmed that in an interview with Gotham Gazette, among other things. What do you mean by that term? When we're at a time where, you know, every day there's another horrific violent crime in the news, the shooting on the Q train. I think the Q train used to go to Astoria. Now it's the Second Avenue subway, if I'm not mistaken. And you know, the 11-year-old, you know, all these things, while the city is doing, hopefully, all the root cause work that you talk about, I think a lot of people would say, but you're out of touch if you say, at the same time, just disband the NYPD. I think you've used those words.
So, and for clarity, I am not just a policing abolitionist, but I'm a prison industrial complex abolitionist. And what that means is that, like, I believe in a long-term vision. Nobody is saying that, you know, police, prosecutors, and jails and prisons are going to disappear tomorrow, but believe and have a hope that we can build out a community and a world where we don't need these things anymore, and that we're not answering violence with violent systems, right? And this is, again, really outcome driven. And it is a very long-term project to say that accountability and punishment are not synonymous, right? You know, justice and incarceration are not synonymous. And at the core of abolition, at the core of an abolitionist framework, is a desire for abundance. It means having that robust health infrastructure, that people have access to what they need to thrive, not just survive, but thrive. You know, when you talk to, and I have had lots of, first of all, being a directly impacted person, you know, growing up in a family with that experienced a lot of economic insecurity, that was exposed to violence, to mental health issues, to substance use issues. This is deeply, deeply personal to me. But, you know, looking at and saying that that policing and incarceration and punishment go hand in hand with austerity, and we need to be providing people with opportunities to heal. You know, in my work as a public defender, when I talk to, and in my work as an organizer and advocate, when you talk to survivors, you know, but first and foremost, before anything else, what they will tell you that they want is an opportunity to heal, to be made whole, to never be hurt the way that they were hurt again, and to make sure that nobody else was hurt in the same way. And everything else is kind of secondary. And our current system creates this false dichotomy around that, that doesn't really allow for that. You can physically remove somebody from our community, but 98% of the time, they're going to be back in our community worse than when they went in. Let me
take one more call for you.
Yeah.
I told you we sometimes get calls from people on Rikers Island, which is in your district, and we're getting one right now. So let's take the call from Ansumana on Rikers. Hello, Ansumana. You're on WNYC with your council member, Tiffany Caban.
Hello, Tiffany Caban. Nice
Hi.
To meet you.
You Hi. As well.
Okay. My question here is that about incarceration, because we have a few problems here, but you know, sometimes we do things because of situation outside. You know, I was addicted to crack cocaine, and it make me do a lot of crazy things. And when the day they arrested me, they saw a lot of crack cocaine on me and a lot of materials, paraphernalia. So I'm telling them to give me program. It's better for me than incarceration, because I'm here. I'm, you know, my life is not safe. You know, this place is on the staff right now, and it's fighting every day, you know, people are aggravated, you know. I'm with people that are facing more time than me. Sometimes they don't really care, you know. I fear for my life here. So what do we do about that?
First of all, I just want to thank you for reaching out and for asking your question. And please don't hesitate to reach out or have a family member reach out to our office if you want additional support. I know that where you are is not safe right now and that you shouldn't be there. I absolutely agree with you, and thank you for sharing that you struggle with, you know, substance use issues. I certainly support access to programming over incarceration. That's what I'm going to continue to push for. And to your point, or at least to expand on something that you said, is that it shouldn't take being arrested and thrown on Rikers to then try to be in that environment and then a position to advocate to try to get treatment and programming. And this is my point. And it goes back to talking about being an abolitionist. It's like creating access points well before you were ever approached by a police officer, ever incarcerated in the first place, to say, why, you know, why can't you get that kind of support on the front end? And that is what I will continue to fight to do, from OPCs to making sure that every single person has access to both physical and mental health care, and things like that. It's so important.
Ansumana, if you want to leave your contact information with our producer on hold for yourself directly or someone you trust, for the council member's office to get in touch with you, we can do that. Or you heard her invitation to contact her or have someone contact her office directly to follow up on your call. So there you go. Your choice. You can leave contact info with us if you want, and we'll pass it along. Well, we're almost out of time. Council member, I want to do two more quick things. One, I just want to acknowledge, to finish the conversation we were having about, long-term reduction in the need for the criminal justice system as it exists. I noticed that the pinned tweet on your Twitter feed is a list of all these root causes programs that the Adams administration is proposing to cut in the current budget negotiation. So that's an ongoing negotiation between now and the end of June. The new fiscal year starts July 1st. We don't have much time, but what would you put at the top of your list for things that you want to see more funded in this budget before council says yes to the mayor?
Oh, yes. Okay. So, I mean, really quickly, the proposed executive budget, it defunds housing, it defunds the Department of Homeless Services, it defunds our public schools, it defunds sanitation, it defunds our public hospitals, parks, small business services. And so I want to see those, you know, those cuts restored, right? We at bare minimum, and then making added investments to that is really important. The mayor had put out the blueprint to public safety and talked about strategies outside of just policing, but they have not been reflected in any line item budgets. And so without hard numbers, that's just rhetoric. And so I want to see deeper investment in, you know, mental health response, violence interrupters. And then I just say this one quick thing too, is today, we just launched Care for All Families, which is a very tiny ask. It's a $10 million ask, 0.01% of the overall budget, to fill the gap that the state left, to make sure that undocumented children get access to the same, you know, publicly subsidized childcare vouchers that everybody else are. And to hammer this home, our immigrant and undocumented friends, families, and neighbors were so essential, continue to be essential throughout the pandemic. And it is an imperative. They deserve this support. They help our city keep going. So that's another ask.
That's great. And by the way, we got Ansumana's fiance's phone number that my office is going to share with your office to follow
Thank
up
you.
On that call from Rikers.
And
Thank last
you.
Question, as I think you know, we're inviting every council member in this series to bring a show and tell item from your district. You got one?
Yes, absolutely. So I know a lot of people like really, really love Astoria Park, and I do too. But just north of Astoria Park, and it's going to be a place that I offer y'all, is Ralph DeMarco Park. And I love it so much because, yes, it is right on the water. You can see my favorite bridge, the Hellgate Bridge. And it's a beautiful view. But we also, a lot of people think of, when they think of Astoria, they think of, you know, it being a Greek neighborhood. We actually have a very large and growing Arab and North African community. And at this park in the summertime, in the evenings, it's just beautiful. The music that's playing, folks bring out hookah, and it's just a very good communal chill vibe, and it's just one of my favorite things about my neighborhood.
And there we leave it for this week's 51 Council Members in 52 Weeks, District 22, with Tiffany Caban. Thank you so much. We look forward to continuing to speak as you serve your term.
Thank you. Appreciate you. Take care.